Hello again, I'm Frieda Morrison. Welcome to Scots Language Radio. And welcome to the programme that celebrates athing to dee with the Scots language. We're going as far north, south, east and west as our lugs will take us. In this edition, we have an exclusive interview with Northeast actor Kevin McKidd of Grey's Anatomy fame, now based in LA. We'll be hearing about his new project and how he came to be doing the Doric voice in the Disney film Brave. And photographer Andy Hall tells us about his new book, Still Licht, that has quotes of Scots poetry a' through it. Lovely book. And we're joined by a man who just never seems to sleep. He's Awai and puts a lot of energy into the promotion of our Scots traditions. We'll be speaking to the executive officer of the Traditional Music Forum, David Francis. More on that later. But first, we're in Murrayshire, in Elgin, in the company of actor Kevin McKidd. Now, Kevin is currently appearing in the ever-popular series Grey's Anatomy on Sky Atlantic TV. We are Helica fans all over the world. He's appeared in the series Rome, Trainspotting, and as I said earlier, he spoke the Doric voice in Disney's film Brave. Now, this interview needs a wee bit of an explanation. I've kent Kevin for years. He was part of us all as he grew up in Elgin. And the night before the interview you're about to hear, we were at a party in a hallowed place in Bishop Mill in Elgin. It's called the Bonnie Earl, a pub just like you saw in Cheers. Mine abdi has their place and a place of abdi, full of locals, farmers, sailors, the occasional politician, RAF personnel, and of course, musicians. We enjoyed years of music through the house. Tell you more about that later. But Kevin mentions the Bonnie Earl in this conversation. And Kevin very kindly turned up next day after the party for this exclusive confab. A hero. I started first by asking him about how important it was to him to be a Scots speaker.
I live in America, so nobody would understand a word if I even broke.
It'd be difficult, aye.
It'd be very difficult. So it's not something that I do on a daily basis, let's put it that way, again, because people just don't understand it. But I do know when I come back to my hometown, to Elgin in Murray, that it's important to me to... That's why I come back, really, is to sort of reconnect with that, with the language here and that sort of... the philosophy that comes along with that and the sort of lifestyle, the sort of coothiness that, you know, life up here that I do miss. So... it's funny, I do drive around sometimes in LA in the car, and I will sort of, just for my own amusement, just like speak a bit of Doric to myself, just to sort of, you can like touch base with it, you know? And probably not very well. My granddad, yeah. Dode, would probably be shaking his head in his grave, you know, going, that's near how you say that, that's the cat.
I've just got his vision, though, you stop at a lecht somewhere in LA and you're chatting about yourself in Doric and there's a book. What's wrong with that boy?
I know, what's wrong with that chill? What's wrong with you on chill?
Fitzy speaking. He's speaking. Oh, anyway, yeah, so it's a link with the heritage. Maybe it's a link with your past.
It's really, I mean, for me, it's more to do with my granddad, really, Dode, George Runcie, who, he was this great sort of, he was sort of a carouser and a, you know, he was quite a character. You've met him, I think, mm-hmm. and he passed away a while ago now. But he really inspired me as a wee boy. I mean, I often say that, like, Dode Runcie was, as people say, who's your favourite actor? I'd be like, Dode Runcie.
Oh, really?
Because he had this ability and he spoke, you know, good Doric, and he kent a lot of funny stories about the old farming days because he was farming in the Northeast all his life. And he would go to the Bonnie Earl and he would just hold the whole place. The only other person I've seen do that, he'd hold the whole place in the palm of his hand. He'd tell stories, he'd sing songs, some of them sad, some of them funny. You can, bothy ballads.
And, like we were doing last night.
Ah, exactly. Yeah. Like doing Barnyards of Delgaty last night.
You made a good job of it.
That was all right. That was quite good. But that gave me a chill up my back of my smile because that was one of my granddad's go-to kind of crowd pleaser songs that he'd sing, mm-hmm. and he just sang it a cappella. He'd just sit there in his cloth cap and sing it, you can. And he'd get drams. All the young boys in the pub would put drams down on the table for him, you know. So he'd sing his songs, and so he very much like he could hold. I'd sit and watch him at his house parties, you know, and he would hold the whole room kind of enthralled, really. and he could do with, he could change the mood like that. It was amazing, you know. The only other person I've seen do that to that level of skill was Peter O'Toole, when I saw him on stage at the Old Vic, you know. So my granddad's up there with Peter O'Toole.
No, he's your favourite actor. Can I bring a writer into the conversation? A man who called Lewis Grassett Gibbon, who wrote Sunset Song. And although he wrote in English, he captured the essence of the Northeast, and he captured the essence of the language.
Aye.
Now, you've had something to deal with that quite recently, because am I allowed to mention that?
Aye,
Tell us what you've been doing.
I did a wee turn in this, they're doing a film of it at the moment, in the Northeast, and
Sunset Song.
And I played the part of Ewan about probably 13, 14 years ago in a BBC Scotland radio play of it, which was very good. It was very well received as well. And it was all folk like Ralph Riach and everybody doing their bit. And it's a wonderful story. It was always really spoken to me, that story. Again, it's all about where my mother's side of the family are definitely from, that sort of hard life of the farming, you know, in the Northeast. So I've been doing that.
Mm-hmm. So fit speech did you hate today? Fit bit did you hate
today? I had to do the final speech that the minister gives at the end, which is quite a hefty speech.
I will give you the morning star.
Yeah, in the sunset of an age and an epoch, we may write that for epitaph of the men that were of it, you know. And it's a beautiful speech, actually. Somebody told me that it was, somebody said it's Gordon Brown's favourite speech about Scotland, which I thought was interesting.
You can't go much further than I will give you the morning star, that speech.
Yeah.
Now, the fact that you understood Scots, not necessarily were speaking Scots then, but did that help you translate that speech?
It did, because as I say, the speech, it's very poetical and poetic rather, and quite philosophical and quite complicated, but also very simple as well. It's a very beautifully crafted speech, but there's a cadence and a rhythm to it that I think I quite easily could grab onto, because mm-hmm. you can feel that different cadence and rhythm and phrasing.
It's a phrasing that he was renowned for.
The phrasing is it very particular, mm-hmm. and I think very particular to the Northeast kind of rhythm. You know, put in the beginning of it. It's almost like sometimes you feel like, I remember my granddad Dode would do this. You know, he'd put the end of the sentence at the beginning, almost. You know, that kind of thing where you go.
One of my favourite phrases is "Come doon hell affa."
He's come doing hell after.
Folks say that about me now. She's come doing hell after.
Exactly.
Like, she's come doing hell after.
Exactly. So, like, you know, the beginning goes at the end, and the end goes at the beginning. And I think if you're not brought up with that, it takes a wee while. So I think I had a definite advantage with that.
The other one, of course, you're famous for your appearing in Grey's Anatomy continually. Worldwide renowned, and yet you came back again to do the voice for Brave. Switching your head again, you know, as I'm doing, switching my conversation, my language, you're switching your head again.
Yeah. Now, well, that was... Go on.
Was that difficult?
Well, it wasn't difficult. It was actually interesting, the process with that, because I was the studio that made Brave was Pixar, you know, mm-hmm. and they're this amazing, world-renowned animation studio that, you know, are in the industry are very well known for being very thorough in their research, you know, I've been in America too long. Research.
It's good research.
My research. But
they'll say he's come doing hell after.
He's come doing hell after. He's got an American accent after. But they came to me and they said, look, we want you to play this character, Lord MacGuffin and his young son, the two characters he wanted me to play. And they said, what we want to do with the young son is to have him be this nicest, sweetest chap, but his big Achilles heel is that he has such a thick accent that nobody can understand a word he says, you know. So they just, in their heads, I think, they just had, we just want an actor to just overdo their accent. And I thought about it for a while, and I went away and had a think, and I got back and saw them again. And this is what's amazing about the studio. That they said, I said, I've been thinking about what you said. And I said, instead of me just doing some daft, generic, over-the-top, indescribable Scottish accent, would you consider me doing a thing called the Doric? And they're like, what's the Doric? What is that? And I was like, well, you know, my granddad and my family all spoke it, and it's a dialect particular to the northeast of Scotland. And I think it could be just a ticket for what you're looking for. And it's actually what I like about it, and I think you'll like about it, is it's actually specific. It's not made up, Ken. It's not just making daft noises, but it is quite hot. It's quite a dense, if when it's done in a thick way, it can be quite, you know, obstructive to understanding sometimes, which is the point they wanted to, for comedic, you know, for comedy relief, they wanted this. So I started to send them YouTube links of old farmers, Ken, sort of talking in Doric and all these old documentaries, and they were like, you know, all the executives at Pixar going, oh my god, we don't understand what they're talking about. And I'm like, exactly. And they went, this is, you can do this? And I was like, well, yeah, I can do a definite form of it. It's in my family's heritage. And then we went in the studio and we tried it out, and they were just falling off their chairs, just thought it was the best thing ever.
So the whole
thing came from their idea that I then had to think about and went back to them and mm-hmm. pitched the idea of doing Doric for it. And so I feel very proud, actually, that I'm probably got, it's probably the first and only time that I managed to get that the Doric will ever be spoken in a Disney film.
Abdi, I think Abdi in the Northeast was half a proud of you. So how convinced are you that it's an essential part of our, obviously, the persona or our personality and in the Northeast? Or in Scotland, to speak Scots, to keep it going?
I think it's very important. I mean, you know, I just think the land and the character of the place is defined by the sound of it. I think it's very important to sort of try and retain that without being somebody, without trying to sort of freeze things in time. That's the important thing. You don't want to freeze things.
It's got to be valid for the 21st century, somewhere along the line.
Exactly. The thing is, for me, it's not, the Doric especially, is not something that I think, oh, it's important that we retain it because it's culturally blah, blah, blah. It's more, there's such joy and fun in the dialect
exactly.
of the Doric that you know, that it's infectious. And that's what my granddad had an ability to do, to use the Doric to infect the whole room with joy and laughter, and sometimes touch people in a quite a deep way, you know, and basically warmth of community and create that, you know, feeling. And it's about that warm, sort of fuzzy feeling that folk get, I think, when you hear that dialect, for me, is why I feel it's important. You know, it's
touching with your ancestors as well.
Exactly, yeah.
On that note, Kevin, all the best, then we'll see you when you're back.
I will see you soon. Cheers.
Actor Kevin McKidd. And my thanks to Kevin for doing that after our party in the Bonnie Earl. Fit is being shut down and turned into a Tesco. We're outraged. So that and a couple of other reasons was why we were there that night. Jam-packed with musicians of all ages and shapes. It was a great night. Saying farewell to the body. Thanks to Abdi and especially to Julie Ahindabar for 20 years putting up with and our gang. Now you're listening to Scots Language Radio. This is Freda Morrison and this is Natalie McMaster playing James Scott Skinner's Welcome to Inverness. Thank you. Natalie McMaster playing James Scott Skinner's Welcome to Inverness. And it's the first chosen track by our studio guest. He's the executive officer of the Traditional Music Forum and mayor for Bye, as you'll hear. Welcome, David Francis.
Hello.
And let me also welcome my regular studio companion, if I has survived being with me in a story tent for 3 days at Gairdner, Scotland. Welcome, Steve Byrne.
Hi, Frieda.
Right, David, I'm going to get your recent projects eventually, the new Bothy Palette project. I'm going to weave up to that. But I'm going to start at the Traditional Music Forum. Simple question, fit is it?
Well, it's a forum, a network of about 80 organisations right across Scotland, every kind of traditional music organisation. There's academic departments like the Elphinstone in Aberdeen, and there's folk clubs and festivals. There's lots of community music organisations, and then right through to the kind of professional end of things as well.
It's just to keep folk informed about what's going on and far, and far's and fit. I keep saying that phrase, far's and fit and far. Is it that sort of thing?
It's partly that. It's partly about supporting people that work in traditional music. It's partly about advocating the value of traditional music to those and such as those, civic society in Scotland, Scottish Government, Creative Scotland, that kind of thing. And also it's about the value of traditional music for the general public as well.
So can anybody join?
It's open to organisations rather than individuals, but that's maybe going to change.
Right. So you spread out Scotland, and then did you say to folk, right, we're going to hear a gathering here, let's meet in Perth and we'll hear a confab?
Well, that's one of the things that we do, is we have an annual conference that moves around. It's been in Dundee, it's been in Perth, it's been in Edinburgh. As well as that, we're starting to look at how we can support traditional music and traditional arts in general on a local basis as well. We had a meeting, for example, in Inverurie in Aberdeenshire a couple of months ago that you were at, and that was really about putting people in touch with our local resources, traditional arts material that sits in archives, that sits in collections. But I think even more important, the material that actually sits in folks' heads. And that's one of the best resources that you can have, is actually people now, with the knowledge.
And in Inverurie, we were introduced to tracks, of course.
Mm-hmm.
Fitch tracks. You've got the Traditional Music Forum and you've got tracks. And this is where the confusion is maybe going to lie. Separate the two for us.
Well, they're not really separate, because the Traditional Music Forum is one of three parts of tracks. There's the Traditional Music Forum, the Traditional Dance Forum, and the Scottish Storytelling Forum.
Right.
And the three of them together make up TRACS, which stands for Traditional Arts and Culture Scotland.
OK, time for another bit of music. This is Faye Battlefield Band, their CD Happy Days. Words and music, Kareen Polwart and Alan Reid. Music, Kareen, of course. This song is called Whar Will We Gang? Appropriate enough.
Eo Madirio, whar will we tarry, oh, if we are to marry, oh, whar will we gang? We could walk along the Seine, Paris in the April rain, say the magic words, your dame, monsieur and madame.
I hear what you're saying, flower, love below the Eiffel Tower, but I get crabbit in a shower, it's just the way I am.
Eo Madirio, where will we tarry, oh, if we have to marry, oh, where will we gang?
Let's go to some Polynesian island where it's never freezing. Lovers wed there every season by the coral sea.
But I'm all peely wally white and my bikini's getting tight, and you are no a bonny sight and trunks a size too wee. Eo Madirio, where will we tarry, oh, if we have to marry, oh, where will we go? In Verona, you can be my Romeo and I'll be Juliet.
It didn't turn out awfully well, they never heard their wedding bells, for they're the pair that killed themselves, gonna no day that.
Eo Madirio, where will we
Ontario, if we have to marry, oh, where will we gang?
And least feast or famine tear braced, whether we go west or east matters not to me.
The world stretches far and wide, and I don't care where we bide, as long as you are by my side,
happy we will be. E-o, Madeira, where will we tarry, oh, if we are to marry, oh, where will we gang? E-o, Madeira, where will we tarry, oh, if we are to marry, oh, where will we gang? E-o, Madeira, where will we tarry, oh, if we are to marry, oh, where will we gang? E-o, Madeira, where will we tarry, oh, if we are to marry, oh, where will we gang?
Where Will We Gang from the Battlefield Band CD Happy Days. Lovely, lovely song there. You're listening to Scots Language Radio. This is Frieda Morrison, and I'm with the Executive Officer of the Traditional Music Forum, David Francis, and also with us is our regular studio companion, folklorist Stephen Byrne. I've given you your Sunday name this time,
you
Stephen.
You have,
aye. So the confabs that we have with our studio guests goes in different directions in every episode. And this one is about to take a backward direction. And this is a very special moment because Richie, our soon sorter, has put together one of these glissandos. This is us going back in time. I'm just that for sure.
My hair's black.
I'm going to take you back to the emergence of Bella McNabb. The emergence of Bella McNabb. And of course the cast, the name of your performances with your better half, Mary Campbell. Mm-hmm. You pioneered the dance calling tradition in this country via Bella McNabb. When did that start?
Well, it wasn't via Bella McNabb, I have to say. It goes back a wee bit further than that.
We don't want another glissando. How did you get into the calling idea? Because you really pioneered the whole thing in Scotland, the calling for the ceilidh bands.
I wouldn't like to claim that, because when I first started doing it, there was actually a couple of other folk. There was wee Colin McLennan here in Edinburgh and a chap called Bob Blair in Glasgow who were already doing it. But I kind of got into it because I'd seen a band at the Cambridge Folk Festival down in England with a caller, and I'd seen how you could introduce all of these new moves and new figures, new dances to an audience that had never done the dances before. Everybody having a great time and great fun. And at that time, the repertoire of dances that people did, certainly in the Northeast, was fairly limited to maybe half a dozen, six or seven dances. And I thought, well, it'd be really interesting to widen that repertoire. So I started to kind of dig about in old RSCDS books and that sort of stuff, looking for suitable dances. And then started doing a wee bit of research, reading, there's a fantastic book called Traditional Dancing in Scotland by Joan and Tom Flett. And one of the things that they did was they'd interview lots of older folk, this was in the 1950s, about the kind of dances that were done in Scotland between the turn of the century and the First World War. And they actually had, you know, lists of programmes for dances and so on. And so I kind of picked up on that and tried to explore some of these, and then introduced them into the dancers' repertoire.
And of course, now it's spread out, Scotland. Can I bring you on to another one of your projects? As I said, you just never had time to sleep, surely, because you're into nothing. But Distill, now, the Distill project is near and dear to your heart, because that's been, you did that with Simon Toomier. Simon, of course, is hands up for trad. He looks after all of that.
He's another boy that never sleeps.
He never sleeps. There's a raffle. I thought wandering about never sleeping. This is what's
Steve's
happening.
Steve's the same.
Huh? Yeah. Distill, what is it?
Distill is a creative development project for traditional musicians or musicians that think of themselves in that way, that are interested in broadening their horizons, particularly in the realm of composition. So it's for people that are steeped in the tradition that actually want to engage in a conversation with other genres of music, like improvised music or contemporary classical music. And we have an annual residential at New Lanark, and then we have an annual showcase as well, in which people get a chance to spread their wings and actually try some things out. And at the residential, we usually invite 8 or 9 musicians to take part in that, and then they work along with usually a contemporary classical composer, a free improviser, and then somebody from outside of the British Isles that's working in a similar area. And we've had folk from Hungary, Finland, Sweden, France, even Morocco in one case as well.
Fantastic.
So it's very rich, and it's also a chance for musicians to just take 3 or 4 days out of the hurly-burly and actually have a wee chance to reflect on what it is they do.
Nay, only that. There's the other thing, something Camuria, because he became an academic again. He went back into Elphinstone and the University in Aberdeen, yeah. And Vicky Dean up there.
I'm doing an MLit.
See?
In
Never sleeps.
Steve's area of expertise, folklore and ethnology. So I've just finished, it's a 2-year, I've just finished the first year of that. So,
when did you get on?
I passed my exams, so I'm glad.
I was asking you that with trepidation. I thought, if not, it's time to be passed. Oh.
And that'd be embarrassing, eh?
That would be
awesome.
Yeah.
Moving quickly on.
But you passed, congratulations.
Got another year to go.
And then you'll be learned. We're just about up to the new Bothy Ballad project now. Mm-hmm. This is another thing you're doing. But it's time for another wee bit of music, and just to get us into the mood. This is the Bothy Ballad champion himself, Hector Riddle, singing Neeps to Pluck.
It was on a Mertmas market day, the snow lay on the ground. A farmer, he came up to a lad, and he offered him £10. But mind, you've neeps to pluck and out the muck, and 100 their jobs for buy. And seeing the gweed wife, she's laid down, you winna mind milking the kye. Ye winna mind milking the kye. Out spoke the lad, oh, he was mad. What was that ye said? That you'd mak me a farmer's boy until a dairy maid. Oh, your neeps I'll pluck and your nowt I'll muck, and the only their jobs were by. But I'm blessed if I will undertake to milk your bloomin' kye, to milk your bloomin' kye. Oh, had your tongue, the farmer said, and nae mak sic a soon. Here, tak the shillin' and say nae mair afore a crood gither's roon. But mind, ye've neeps to pluck and out to muck, and 100 their jobs for by. And if the gweed wife she gets up, I winna bid ye milk the kye, I winna bid ye milk the kye. That's a' very weel, the laddie said, I've heard that tale afore. But I'm an hame proof than this, afore I enter your door. Oh, your neeps I winna pluck, and your nowt I winna muck, and the only their jobs were by. Nor tack in hand to be a dairy maid, a milk your bloomin' kye, oh, a milk your bloomin' kye. I've got the maid, the farmer said, she has the milk as well. Had on, the laddie cried, man, that's another tale. Oh, your neeps I'll pluck and your nowt I'll muck, and the only their job for by. And if the maid, she comes along wi' me, we'll very soon milk your kye, we'll very soon milk your kye. The laddie arrived wi' his butcher's foo and a chucky on his back. When he spied the farmer wi' an awful gleam, hearing a quiet crack. Oh, that'll be the guidwife, the laddie said. I'm glad she's nearly done. For I dunno when to start the milking yet, afore I've seen round the town. Afore I've seen round the town. My wife's nae better, the farmer said, but this is your dairy maid. She'll help you with the milking, since she's gotten your supper laid. Oh, your neep she can pluck, and your nout you can muck, and the only other jobs were by. For it's a winner at a woman with a face like that. She doesn't put your coos dry. She doesn't put your coos dry.
I love that last line. Hector, with, of course, neeps to pluck. Hector's riddle. Half a CD were made called The Harvest Sessions. This is Scots Language Radio. I'm Frieda Morrison. With me is special guest, Executive Officer of the Traditional Music Forum, David Francis, and, of course, our regular studio companion, Steve Byrne. David, we have now reached the new bits into your present hat. And neeps to pluck really brings us into your new project, your Bothy Ballad project. Tell us about that.
Well, it's a thing that's happening over in Fife called the Real Bothy Project. And it was started off by an artist over there, a chap called Alan Grieve, who loves to collect stories. And he thought one way of doing this would be to actually make a bothy. So he made a wee bothy out of MDF, and you can dismantle it and build it up again. And he takes it around various shopping centres and community centres and so on in Fife, and then invites folk to sit in the bothy and then just have a bit of a crack. And he records the stories, and because he's a very good artist and a lovely calligrapher, he's actually started to write wee bits of the stories up on the inside wall of the bothy, which is, you know, the kind of thing that you see in hill bothies as well, where, you know, folks stick newspaper cuttings and mm-hmm. stuff like that onto the walls. And myself and Mary Campbell and Finlay Napier have got the job of being songwriters in residence, and it's our job to turn some of these stories from the bothy into songs.
So who far on are you?
I have to say, I think Finlay's a bit further on than we are. We've got about three songs at the minute, uh-huh. based on various
so far,
stories.
Is this going to be made into a CD so other folk can hear them, or if it's going to happen to the songs?
Well, the first thing is that we have to get a wee band together and actually do some performances, which we'll be doing at various wee festivals across Fife over
that's
the summer.
That's a great idea. And that's a super idea.
It's a lovely idea.
So you can sit down and say, OK, we're going to write a bothy ballad. No.
Well, if you like, it's a song inspired by the bothy rather than a bothy ballad.
But I'm going to go back into maybe just steering the pot a wee bit, which sometimes every now and then I do that. We had the last episode with Mamie Haddon on, speaking about Fitz a folk song, mm-hmm. see? Now, for them it doesn't ken, Fit is a bothy ballad. This is far, Abdi thinks, right, we've got the definitive answer to this, and Abdi's different. Fit is your definition of a bothy ballad.
Well, I think defining a bothy ballad is actually a bit easier than defining what's a folk song.
It wasn't easy.
Well, the bothy ballads, as I understand it, were the songs that the farm workers made up to amuse themselves in the chommer, in the bothy, at the end of the day. They're largely, I think the ones, certainly the ones that have survived, are the ones that were made by very skilled songwriters and wordsmiths, I would say. I guess that they go back to about the late 19th century and then into the 20th century. So the period in which they were produced was actually quite restricted.
It's a wee bit earlier than that. It goes back to about sort of 1830. Mm-hmm. Kind of the traditional bothy ballad that you would think of before you get to the kind of the stage bothy ballads of Willie Kemp and G.S. Morris and that kind of thing. 1830 to 1890 is what's considered the main composition period.
Because
was that mere music hall though?
No, that's the mere traditional ones, you know, your kind of drum delgies and all that sort of thing.
They were still in the bothy sitting right now in the 1920s.
The music hall stuff came a bit after that.
Well, I think a lot of the bothy ballads as well refer to a particular pattern of farm working, And as Steve says, that actually got established around about 1830, when the days of post-Jethro Tull seed drill days, and it all started to get a bit more organised, right up to the time of mechanisation. So I guess probably about 100 years or something like that.
Mm-hmm. Because everybody I speak to has a different definition if it is a birthday. I get confused about, I'm not going to go into this too deep because we'll be in for hours, but the corn kisters. Now, far did the corn kisters come in then?
Well, the corn kister, I suppose, would be Cad. I mean, Gavin Gregg Cad some of these songs corn kisters, so he's maybe the chiel that's muddied the waters a wee bit, but the corn kisters are regarded sometimes as the music hall songs, rather than the older traditional bothy ballads.
So they would be about the 1930s?
They'd be around that sort of time, maybe a wee bit earlier. But things that, you know, made their way into gramophone records. That sort of thing.
The McGinty's Meal and Ale and that sort of thing.
Indeed,
the sort of hyper-comedic kind of, you know, laughing your socks off kind of thing. But the other thing that's interesting about them, though, is that for a long time, certainly growing up, I thought that bothy ballads were the firm workers lamenting their lot. They were kind of saying, "Oh, dinna gang and work for you ken the boy at up at Kearney or at Delgaty or whatever, because he's a richt rogue and you'll nae get your fee and all that sort of thing." Ian Olson's a brilliant font of knowledge in this, a real bothy ballad specialist up in Aberdeenshire, and he is of the opinion that something like the Barnyard of Delgaty was kent as a fantastically wee laugh, first class top firm. So the idea of singing about getting a Delgaty and funding twa auld rickety baned horses was something actually not just to amuse the workers but to amuse the farmer as well at their genuine meals and ale. So it was different
just
ideas.
Just for your information, my granddad was the grieve at the Delgaty, the Barnyard of Delgaty. He used to sing about it. Now, just on that theme, pause anew for another song chosen by yourself, David. Mm-hmm. This is Mistress Greg, sung by Jamie Taylor. And this is just to give you a wee flavour of Fitwick Arda's source material. Fitwick, why did you choose this?
Well, I love this because I love the whole album that this is off, which is one of the Scottish Traditions series from the one of the early plunderings of the archives at the School of Scottish Studies. And I just love this. Jamie Taylor, I love his voice. I love the expressiveness of it. I love the quality of it. He's not what you would call a classic singer, but he's just got so much character in his voice. And this Mistress Greg is a funny story, and he just puts it over so deadpan that you can't help but laugh.
It's just a wee flavour of it. Here it is then, Jamie Taylor and Mistress Greg.
'Twas at a seared and firm tune on the winding Devran Flady border. There was an old wife, he got Mistress Greg, the servant girl, she kept in order. Tow, row, 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 fal-al-de-de-de-lady, to tow, row, row. Elke nacht afore she gaed till her bed, she did search the house all over, for fearing a villain might be there, and amongst them prove her over. Tow, row, 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 fal-al-de-de-de-lady, to tow, row, row. The women of this said tired been a suit of men's clothes they procured, and they had made a man a strain, and underneath the bed he was buried. Tow, row, 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 fal-al-de-de-de-lady, to tow, row, row. As Mistress Greg was John a-roonst, was underneath the bed she spied him. Come out of that, ye villain, she cried, and dinna think your fame a-hiding. Tow, row, 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 fal-al-de-de-de-lady, to tow, row, row.
That was Mistress Greg, sung by Jamie Taylor. Lovely.
You'll have
lovely
to seek it out and seek it find out what happens.
Chosen by my studio guest, David Francis, from the Traditional Music Forum. And I'm going to give you a wee break now, because I'm going to focus over Ian on the glorious landscapes of Scotland in the company of renowned photographer Andy Hall. Andy hails Foustonhaven, and a camera in his hand turns into a magic box, capturing some of the best pictures. And he has an E for a photo. The iCad, he has an E for a photo. And the lugs for a poem, as you'll hear. His new book, Cad Still Licht, is peppered with appropriate poems to fit the picture. I managed to catch up with Andy before he disappears over another hill and another project to blether with him about his new book, and he tell me first, fit inspired the book.
Well, the idea came from a thought that drifted into my mind while sitting appreciating the early morning light in Calgary Bay and Mull, when I remembered a few lines from Edwin Muir's poem Childhood, which involved the phrase still light, and I thought I would want to explore that further.
So thick is still light then?
Well, still, the idea of still light for me is the stillness coming from the tranquility which I enjoyed the morning when I was looking out over the sea, the enduring quality of that. And it's just that time when everything is in position and fading. The idea of the end of the day, but there's still, if you prepare to sit and absorb it, so you can still see things in lovely, tranquil but soft light.
So do you sit and look at a scene, and there you are with your camera, ready to take the photo, and you think, I can the very quotation I would put to that.
Sometimes, Frida, but other times I knew of a writer who had written about that area, Norman McCaig, for example, in Ascent. I know Ascent, and I knew what kind of shot I wanted to take, but I had to go and reread and look through his work again to find the perfect words, the mots juste, just to go with the image.
Now, the images are from our Scotland.
All over Scotland, traditional and contemporary writers, yeah.
Is there a particular part of Scotland, though, that is better for this particular light?
I wouldn't say so particularly. I think the East Coast is excellent in the morning, characteristic clear light, and the West Coast, just by definition, really, at sunset and the twilight is exceptional. But the beauty of Scotland really is you can access both of them very easily. It's such a compact country.
What about choosing the poets, though? Do you have, you said earlier on it was contemporary and traditional, but you must have your favourites.
I have my favourites. Lewis Grassic Gibbon's a favourite writer of mine, and I stay in Stonehaven, and I'm down in Arbuthnot a lot. And the idea of the enduring aspect of the land that he wrote about means a lot to me. But it really, I read a lot of Scottish literature, and I like to do it reading aloud to myself rather than reading it. You know, I say it to myself just because it's an oral tradition, and I prefer it that way.
I can't remember which part of the book it comes from, but Lewis Grassic Gibbon quotes on many occasions about the stones. Now, the stones remain, don't they?
They do. They're permanent. And one of the things I like about it, down in Arbuthnot and around where I live at the Norder Castle, places like that, is that they endure, but the skies, everything else changes, the seasonal changes, the daily changes with the sky. There's a permanence of the stones and the transience of the nature around about it.
Is there a quote from Lewis Grassic Gibbon we can put in?
There is, yeah. I can. So this image that I have, was it ploughing time, low light, sun almost away, causing very deep shadows, an amazing cloud. And the piece of writing is the idea of the land enduring. The folk who wrote and fought and were learned, teaching and saying and praying, they lasted but as a breath, a mist of fog in the hills, but the land was forever. It moved and changed below you, but was forever. And that's a theme that recurs in Grassic Gibbon's writing, that we are just there for a short period of time, but the land endures.
Are you trying to capture a spirit of the land or a spirit of the place in your photography?
The thing with this project, Frida, was I didn't want to illustrate the poems. I wanted to have my image alongside words that both of them, when you looked at them and listened to them together, they gave a sense of place. It wasn't an illustration, and I didn't want great screeds of poetry or prose either. I wanted just to select words from a poem or from a piece of prose that just encapsulated the feeling that the image has in the book and what I tried to capture at the time.
One last poem. 15 have you chosen?
I've chosen The Little White Rose by Hugh McDermid, and this is the last poem or extract in the book. And it means a lot to me on several levels, but one of which is that it just sums up the feelings of people about Scotland in four very straightforward, simple lines. The rose of all the world is not for me. I want for my part only the little white rose of Scotland that smells sharp and sweet and breaks the heart. And one of the things that that mean a lot to me from this project was artist John Byrne, who I really admire, love his work. When he wrote back to me, he said that he loved the photographs, he said, but when he got to the last one, it really did break my heart. And coming from him, that meant a great deal to me, that I'd managed to capture an image that he felt was significant to him.
Andy Hall, and you can see that wee white rose of Scotland, my favourite flower, on our Facebook page. Teen by my very own camera and my very own garden. And Andy's new book, Still Licht, is published by Lewith Press, price £9.99. And that brings me on to my regular studio companion, folklorist Steve Byrne, who, as I say, rummels about in books a lot. Some folk just like rummeling, but he sorts out interesting and fascinating nuggets of information about our ancient traditions. Never let it be said, his rumbling is nae appreciated. Fitz been catching your ear this month, Mr. Byrne.
Well, we'll see how far we get this month. Right. I had to have a lie down after last
he
month.
Was on your start. He was on. Hundreds of things last week.
Well, here we go. July time is when the St. Ronan's Games get going for about 10 days in Innerleithen. Now, they were started in 1827 and they're the oldest organised sports meeting in Scotland, and it's now part of a 10-day festival. And have you heard of the word or the phrase cleekum? Well, that has come into play partly through Walter Scott, because the idea was that apparently St. Ronan had cleeked the deal in by the ankle into the well. So we've got a couple of wee bitties for that. Folk had a jest that St. Ronan took it the devil in the wall, which garred taste aye since o' brimstone. That's Walter Scott's St. Ronan's well. And they had a cleekum parade. The first cleekum started in 1901. And for the day is the install the ducks boy for the local skill in the character of St. Ronan. Mm-hmm. And he gets handed the lamp and the staff, symbolic of the patron saint. And here's another wee poem. It's actually a lyric for a song that's been written by George Hope Tate. Battling nobly wi' his back, yerk it to the wa. Bold St. Ronan cleeked the deal and gied his leg a thra. He gied his leg a thra, the crafty cleek him thra, and the place he fells a surfer well, and the pilgrims drink the spa.
That's a good one. I like a gied's leg a thra. Next bit.
Well, we've had World Cup fever going on, of course. Dave and myself were quite into what we would cry real footbar. Dave, being a Dunhamer for his part of the world, had been winding me up all last season, because I'm a Reid Lichty for her broth, and every time Queen of the South meet her broth, we tended not to come off very well for that.
Less said
about that, the better. But I'd meet him on the train wearing his Queen of the South scarf, and here we are. So you're in a different league to us now, is it?
We are. Aye, in more ways than one.
So I suppose just to say that the 9th of July 1867, that was when Queen's Park Football Club was formed, the first senior club in Scotland. So that's done a wee bit for the World Cup. Other things that happened in a July in Scotland. 1637, Jenny Geddes had objected to the use of the new prayer book put through by Charles I, her immortal words being, "Dost thou say mass in my lug?" And of course, kicked off the St. Giles riots. And in my readings, I found out that Robert Burns had actually named his horse after her.
No.
Aye, he has. And name checks the horse in Enertois, his poem. So, an interesting one, I suppose. We were talking a wee bit about attitudes to Scots, and Kevin McKidd had touched on that in his bit earlier on. In July 2002, George Bruce, the poet and broadcaster, had died in his 90s, and he was one of the lads that was part of the Scottish literary renaissance with McDermott and Norman McCaig, Hamish Henderson, folk like that. And he, although he was for the Broch, he didn't write an awful lot in Scots. He tended to write mair in English, but he wrote an awful interesting poem called Urn Burial, with the subtitle R.I.P. Scots Tongue. So I just thought I would. I've no got a date on this, but I'll hate to go back and see when it was written, because I think it's half interesting in the context of what we were saying with the developments now as to how vibrant things are. And of course, with the census results, folks saying 1.5 million folk identify themselves as Scots speakers. So I'll read you a wee bit of that.
A wee bit of that.
And hopefully I'll no get a row. So here we are. So it's talking about going to the funeral of the Scots language. But there was some grand mourners, the editor of the Scottish National Dictionary, head of the Department of Scot Lit, president of the Burns Federation, president of the Saltire Society, ah, present in strict alphabetical order, and ain twa ora Scot Nats. Sign cam a fuff o' wind and lifted it out of the bowley, and hine awa, a wee bird sang. Dew dreeped on the belled heads o' the auld men, stood glowering at the tomb tomb. She's jink it again, the bitch, said the man with the spade.
Do you like that? You see, he comes out with these bits, Dave, and you think, well, maybe if we should just encourage him to rummel mare, because he's rummeling just kind of, you know, throw up nuggets like that. Great
so
stuff.
So I'm fond of the wee kind of, you know, that revival at the end when it's, you know, the language is still going.
Still going, aye. Yeah. Well, that just about brings us to the end of another episode. But before we go, our congratulations to the Murrayshire Toon O'Keefe, which is very apt for your last comment there, that has just been designated the first Scots toon in recognition of the work done to keep the Scots language alive up there. Congratulations. More on that in a later episode. And I cannot go without mentioning the Dolly Parton concert in Aberdeen. I said last episode I was looking forward to going. Even got my new suede boots, and the concert was just the best. Fit a performer and singer, fae unaccompanied to full backing, and she really did a couple of really beautiful unaccompanied songs there. And she raised the roof, of course, with her final song, I Will Always Love You, and I love this moment. The crowd, and just imagine it, thousands of folk in the Aberdeen Conference Centre went wild. And just as the applause kind of went down a bit, the man of Hinma said, with deep northeast praise, aye, summies. I just summed it up. Summies. On that note, my thanks to our special guest, David Francis, Executive Officer of the Traditional Music Forum. And Stevie, could you give us the technical bits again, please?
I can indeed. Our Facebook page is rthews.facebook.com/Scots Language Radio. You can email the show at info@scotslanguageradio.com, and you can find us on iTunes.
Thank you very much. And we finish with a track called The Rose Polka and J.B. Milne's Polka, chosen by David Francis. Why did you choose this one, David?
Well, I just J.B. Milne's one of my favourite tunes. I just love it. And I'm being a wee bit thrown because the band that's playing here, the Old Swan Band, they're from the south of England. So it's just interesting to hear what our neighbours, Firth, do with one of our tunes.
What are tunes? Grand! And before I go, I need to say thank you to our soon-sorter, Richie Werner, for his ease again surpassed himself. Biscuits, Glissandos, the Helging Band. Join us again for the next episode. In the meantime, fae me Freedom Orson, by the new. Feather up, Richie.